Hello, I'm Hagar Cohen and you're with Background Briefing on ABC Radio National.
Please select one of the following options. For inquiries about health or safety, including workplace bullying, press 2. For inquiries about...
It'll be no news to listeners that there seems to be an awful lot of bullying around. High-profile cases like the company Pacific Brands being sued for $9 million over allegations of bullying of its previous underwear manager. The Commonwealth Bank and Woolworths have also attracted headlines, and news of young people committing suicide after being bullied by peers. And there are hundreds of other cases that never make it to the media, and even more, where people quietly move on. Lawyer Tony Carbone.
I hate to say this, and I know it's not the answer to a problem, but if you're in the early days of a situation where you think you're being bullied, and it's before you're actually at a point where you need medical treatment, if you can, get out of that workplace, move on, find alternative employment.
The organisation that regulates bullying in Victoria is experiencing an extraordinary spike in bullying complaints. Those calls to WorkSafe have this year increased by 150%. Ian Forsyth.
In the past 12 months, we've got a bit over 6,000 calls have related to activities that people calling in have described as bullying. And that is up significantly on the statistics from previous years. On average, we get about 25 of those calls a day, whereas typically we might have got about 10 or so.
This sudden rise in allegations may have two causes: increasing media attention and more stressful conditions at work. Professor Michael Quinlan.
There is a need, I think, to also recognise that the health and safety inspection and regulatory regime cannot fix up every problem that is being created by poor policies at other ends of society. So that if we do regulate the workplaces, you can't let the health and safety inspector come in and fix it all up. It's not going to work.
Some of the cases you'll hear about today are of the most insidious kind. Other cases are bordering on torture. The program today will take you through some personal experiences of people who feel the system is letting them down. A growing chorus of industry experts now say the bullying watchdog in Victoria, WorkSafe, is not stepping in when they're needed, exposing workers to harm. Health and safety consultant Jim Kent.
My personal view is that I think that WorkSafe one day soon is heading towards a royal commission. The tragedy of that is that that might happen after there's been a significant incident of some sort. That seems to be the pattern of these things.
But everyone agrees, investigating complaints about bullying is a tough gig, particularly when there seems to be a lot of confusion about what bullying really is. Ian Forsyth is Director of Health and Safety with WorkSafe.
There is a bit of a mismatch between what people may believe constitutes bullying, or perhaps what they label bullying, and what is required with regards to a bullying investigation or prosecution under the Occupational Health and Safety Act. I think there's some research which showed that younger people today would describe any event that goes against them as being bullying.
We'll return to the issues around WorkSafe a little later in the program. People will bully for different reasons. Some are under stress themselves, others see it as a way of exerting their dominance over their colleagues. In Gillian Sneddon's case, it started when her boss realised she knew he was having sex with underage men.
A young man rang me, he was 23 years old and he was crying. And that's when he told me that Milton had been sexually abusing him since he was 15 and that Milton was on speed and heroin and that he was bribing him.
That is, of course, the story of the whistleblower in the Milton Orkopoulos child abuse scandal. The disgraced New South Wales minister intimidated Gillian at the office, hoping she would be too frightened to speak out.
I really thought, well, Milton is like a cornered rat. That's how I was feeling. And that's why I felt my life was in danger, even being in the office. I felt anything could happen.
The intimidation was relentless. Gillian Sneddon says that the minister froze her out yelled at her and ridiculed her appearance in public.
He'd comment on my breasts, which were a ridiculous thing to talk about. I don't know why he would. And he'd even walk through my office and he'd always say, oh, we need to get Gillian a man. We need to get her a man. Why say that to your staff member?
She says that despite repeated requests to her employer, Parliament House, they didn't support her and the bullying continued. Before Milton Orkopoulos was convicted of child sex and drug offences, Gillian Snedden had a breakdown.
I ended up in hospital in 2007 for 5 weeks because I'd lost the will to live. When employee services did ring me, I'd say to them, look, I need help. I'm really, really stressed. Can you help me? They could not make any assistance to help me through it. It was a bit like I was set adrift on a leaky boat without a paddle. They just didn't want to know me. I said, all right, I'll get a solicitor.
Gillian Snedden has been awarded over $438,000 after suing Parliament, State of New South Wales and Milton Orkopoulos. Outside court, Gillian Snedden said she feels vindicated after a tough fight for justice. Jamel Wells, ABC News, Sydney.
Last month in Victoria, legislation was passed that, in a world first, made bullying a criminal offence. The maximum penalty is 10 years in jail. In late May, the matter was discussed in the Legislative Council. Labor MP Martin Pakula.
This is an important piece of legislation. This is about strengthening the ability of Victoria Police, the government, the courts to deal with bullying and to ensure that those individuals who take it upon themselves to make other people's lives a misery in whatever manner they choose to do it can be met with the full force of the law.
The amendment to the Crimes Act was named Brodie's Law after a 19-year-old waitress, Brodie Panlock. The young woman was driven to suicide by her co-workers who bullied her at work.
And I think all members of the House would recall with great sadness that at Cafe Vamp, a 19-year-old woman, Brodie Panlock, was subjected to a campaign of abuse, a campaign of workplace bullying and intimidation by three tormentors, Nicholas Smallwood, Rhys McAlpine, Gabriel Toomey, who amongst other disgraceful acts spat on her, poured beer and oil on her, offered her rat poison.
Mr. Pakula went on to say,
we are pleased that to the limited extent that an Act of Parliament can help to heal the hurt felt by the Panlock family and other victims of bullying, we're pleased that the Parliament is able to do that.
It was the end of the day and the motion was passed. Minister Richard Dalla Riva.
That effectively, as of now, Brodie's Law takes effect and I wish it quick passage through this chamber.
Those of that opinion say aye.
Aye.
On the contrary, no. I think the ayes have it.
Watching this debate unfold from the public gallery were Brodie's parents. Recently, Background Briefing visited the parents in their family house in Melbourne. Brodie's father is Damien Panlock.
I think on the day it was fantastic. We saw all the different parliamentarians. They were all talking exactly the same. There was no arguments. There was no yelling. It was nothing. It was all just quiet. One person spoke, one after another. It got a bit deep. We did leave for a while because it was just a bit too much. And they came and shook our hands and hugged us and all this sort of stuff. So it was pretty overwhelming.
Brodie's mother, Ray Panlock, feels that at least her daughter didn't die in vain.
I guess in a way it's like Brodie's legacy. What else can I say? It's been a long time coming and when I was sitting there, I thought, gee, it's actually happening. There is going to be a law, which you hope and pray that it's going to help other people along the way, that we don't have these sort of situations again.
The accused in Brodie's case were convicted and fined a total of $335,000. It's possible that if the new law had been in place during the time of the trial, the men would have been sent to jail. Brodie's father, Damien Panlock, still feels police should charge them with physical assault.
Why haven't they charged them? I can't understand it, and I've spoken to the Attorney General, Victoria, and he and his department can't understand it. Assault is assault. That's the least amount of what they did to her. Well, I'd like to see the police charge these people.
At the time, police told the Panlocks that the abuse their daughter went through didn't justify a criminal investigation, but the death was investigated by the coroner and then prosecuted. The parents are now campaigning to introduce Brodie's Law nationally.
Bullying's everywhere, and it's in all, you know, walks of life, from police force to fire brigades to nursing to small cafes to wherever it may be. And, I mean, there's some really serious bullying going on with young apprentices, that sort of thing, where it just gets beyond where you really can put someone's life at risk.
The case of Brodie Panlock is one of the most extreme incidents of workplace bullying. And while the number of bullying allegations is on the rise, most aren't nearly as severe as the Panlock case. Ian Forsyth from WorkSafe Victoria.
We get calls that are horrendous, calls that are absolutely horrendous. There is no question about that. But we would also get a call, for example, from someone who perhaps a colleague or a supervisor had walked past them in the foyer and had said hello to two of their colleagues but not said hello to them. We would get significant numbers of calls along those lines where that behaviour is described as bullying. Now, unless it's part of another series of activities and behaviours, that would not constitute bullying. But that person is upset by that, they are disturbed by that, and they want some form of remediation. But we're not the organisation that can deliver it.
New figures from WorkSafe show that there's been a dramatic spike in complaints to their call centre ever since the accused in Brodie Panlock's case were found guilty in February last year. A month before the conviction, in January, WorkSafe received 150 calls. That number went up to a staggering 550 calls in February and 750 calls in March. Ian Forsyth links this spike to the publicity about the 2010 conviction in Brodie Panlock's case.
One of the key drivers that we believe of an increase in calls into the bullying area was the Brodie Panlock prosecution. So in the immediate period after February 2010, we certainly saw that significant spike in calls coming into the advisory area, which I suppose is not surprising given the amount of coverage and the amount of community interest in that matter, not just in Victoria, but indeed worldwide.
Most states are guided by the principle that bullying is a type of inappropriate conduct that's repetitive and is meant to intimidate. It's tricky territory because human behaviour is subjective and people will interpret it differently. Sydney lawyer Malcolm Davis.
That's part of the problem. When you get to the very heart of it, a lot of these things are incredibly subjective. And the people who ultimately determine those cases have to make a value judgment as well about whether something is inappropriate or whether it is inside the line.
Malcolm Davis has the job of defending those people accused of bullying behaviour. He says his office has also been inundated with calls from people who need legal advice about defending themselves.
I would say it's pretty dramatic. I wouldn't be surprised if I got, you know, a 20 or 30% increase over the last 12, 24 months in allegations of bullying and harassment. It's the response to normal confrontations rather than targeted serious bullying and harassment. Can I give you an example of that? And I represent employers, obviously. What I'm finding is that people who are being subject to normal counselling procedures about their conduct in the workplace are very quick to allege that they're being bullying and harassed. And
can you tell me why?
The tension arises just in the language we use. If I were an employee and I'd had a discussion with my manager about how I went about my daily activities, I think it would probably be quite a natural response to say, well, you know, I'm under a lot of stress. There isn't any doubt. I've been put under a lot of pressure as a result of this process. I am being targeted. That's the fact. I probably am being targeted because I've been identified as perhaps an underperformer. So just in the English language, if somebody asked me, how are you feeling? Oh, well, I'm feeling bullied and harassed. You know, there's no doubt about that. Whether that then amounts to unlawful bullying and harassment is another thing.
Harassment at work is not always from the top down. It can be from one employee to another, or an employee bullying a manager. Usually, the victim will raise the bullying issue inside the workplace. The next step is going to the official bullying watchdog.
Welcome to WorkSafe Victoria. Please select one of the following options. For inquiries about workers' compensation, including claims for an injury, press 1. For inquiries about health or safety, including workplace bullying, press 2. For inquiries about licensing, including licensing,
but some of those agencies in each state responsible for protecting employees from harassment have recently been accused of bullying their own staff. For example, an investigation of WorkCover New South Wales this year found a widespread culture of bullying. There's a link to the final report on the Background Briefing website. In an investigation into bullying at the call centre of WorkSafe Victoria has just been completed. Ian Forsyth.
Those allegations have been tested. The investigation is complete. There were a large number of allegations. They were basically unsubstantiated. There was, I believe, from recollection, one matter of concern, and that was described by the investigator at the lower end of the spectrum, and that related to someone raising their voice in a conversation.
WorkSafe has also been accused in the media and in Victoria's Legislative Council of not protecting workers in need. For example, health and safety consultant Jim Kent worked for the regulator for 20 years and now privately for 16 years. One case Jim Kent is working on that's attracting attention is about Sam.
Sam's case is without a doubt the worst that I've seen. I've seen other matters that are as alarming. People have been killed at work in the most preventable of circumstances. But this is every bit as bad in that it was not only preventable, it was something that was forecastable.
Jim Kent's client, Sam, not his real name, is an employee in a Melbourne-based factory. He wants to remain anonymous.
I'd been roughly 10 years without any issues within the company. No disciplinary sort of things, even a written warning or even a verbal warning was never issued over that period of time. And it was hard for me to accept the same company that I had a bit of respect for, or a lot of respect for, would turn around and literally cut me down like a piece of grass.
It was after taking up the role of a health and safety representative that Sam's relationship with his employer turned sour.
I raised the concerns of asbestos, which was contaminating other employees working there through blowing through the plant. And because I'd involved myself in it, my supervisor took task of me of saying, you put your nose into something you weren't supposed to. I said the process wasn't adequate to do the job and men were being exposed. But they still proceeded to write me up and to try and sack me.
This is only one example, but in the past 2 years, Sam has documented many other instances where he feels he was being bullied. To protect Sam's anonymity, we were unable to approach the company for a reply. However, his employer is now being prosecuted by WorkSafe, and a few weeks ago, the company pleaded not guilty. Sam maintains he experienced a campaign of bullying and intimidation.
I wasn't bringing attention to anything unless it was quite crucial. A lot of minor things you'd just brush off, don't worry about it. But because in the past they'd taken other OH&S rep to task because he hadn't mentioned about an issue, and he ended up being terminated because they believe he was negligent of what his duties was. So in my mind, I was between a rock and a hard place, a damned if I do, a damned if I don't.
Background Briefing has a letter where the medical records are documented and they show that the bullying incidents at work are linked to instances of high blood pressure levels and anxiety attacks.
Many a times I went to the nurse a bit anxious, blood pressure was raised, where they told me to go and sit down and relax for a bit. A couple of times ended up for a few hours in hospital trying to get my blood pressure down because it made me so anxious and stressed. I didn't want to be off work. I know being off work's not good for anybody.
Sam's union, the Australian Manufacturing Workers Union, suggested to him that he call WorkSafe. So he did, and that's when a two-year-long process of investigations and appeals started. Helping him throughout this time is the union's health and safety coordinator, Frank Fairley.
The problem with it is that the response time of the bullying unit, once they get involved, they conduct their investigation, then it goes off to another person for them to look at, and then it finally gets to the WorkSafe legal department. In the meantime, the worker who's being bullied is either still in the workplace continuing to be bullied, or the bullying in some instances then ramps up and gets even worse because they've made a complaint.
Sam had put in an official complaint with WorkSafe. After a few weeks, he called them to ask what was happening. He was told that his complaint had been lost and asked to detail it again. From then, for almost a year, the case stumbled on and Sam was given very little information. Consultant Jim Kent.
What happened over the next 11 months was amazingly bad, in that some visits by WorkSafe was haphazard, it was uncoordinated, it was totally ineffectual. Communication was bizarre, and over the next 11 months, WorkSafe did nothing effective towards stopping the bullying, because the bullying absolutely continued.
WorkSafe would not comment on particular cases for privacy reasons, but their Director of Health and Safety explains why investigations can take a long time. Ian Forsyth.
It really is challenging. You're getting different stories, perhaps, or different versions of events from different people, whether there are witnesses involved, the period of time where activities may have been happening. It is very, very complex for our inspectors to go out there and sift through the myriad evidence, and we have to follow a due process. It's part of the normal justice process, if you like.
In Sam's case, it eventuated that after nearly a year, WorkSafe made the decision that Sam's employer needed to improve processes and procedures relating to bullying inside the company. WorkSafe issued a notice of improvement. Sometime later, WorkSafe visited the company and concluded that all was now well. They closed the case, but they didn't tell Sam about their decision, and as far as Sam was concerned, everything kept going on in the same way as before. Constant harassment. From the union, Frank Fairley.
I think part of the problem is there isn't a procedure in place to say where we have, in WorkSafe's view, a legitimate case of bullying, what do we do with the victim? And because of that, the victim either has to stay at work and continue to be bullied, and it probably ramps up, or they have to go home without pay.
Using his insider knowledge of WorkSafe, veteran health and safety consultant Jim Kent helped Sam writing letters to the organisation. He thought this way, Sam would be taken more seriously.
Sam continuously wrote letters to various people, including those at the highest levels within WorkSafe, complaining bitterly of the ongoing mistreatment of him by his employer.
Another instance of bullying at work was so severe it sent Sam home. His blood pressure had skyrocketed. He reported this to WorkSafe and the regulator reopened the bullying investigation. At the end of this appeal process, Sam received a letter from a WorkSafe investigator about the bullying, saying,
"It is my belief that the allegations are substantiated."
Had WorkSafe done its job much earlier, I believe that would be one less work cover claim, one less injured worker, and at the end of the day, that's what WorkSafe claims to be about.
At the same time, WorkSafe also investigated a separate claim from Sam that he was discriminated against at work. That claim was also substantiated because it came out that Sam was put at a disadvantage for raising concerns about safety hazards. Frank Fairley.
People don't exactly jump out of their skin to be health and safety reps. You know, they're not that easy to find. clearly because he was doing his job that his peers had elected him to do. That's the main reason he was being bullied.
The whole story becomes incredibly complex, with mistakes and confusions all around. It's now 2 years since the bullying started, and WorkSafe is now prosecuting the company on 2 charges of bullying and 1 of discrimination. Sam is unfit for work and at home on sick leave. His claim for compensation, which has to be made to a different arm of WorkSafe, was initially rejected. Jim Kent.
You had this farcical situation where on one hand you've got one part of WorkSafe, the enforcement group, satisfied beyond reasonable doubt that there's been an offence and prosecuting the employer. Parallel with that, and at the same time, we had WorkSafe's approved insurance agent rejecting the work cover claim on the basis that they refuted any allegation of bullying.
It was Sam's colleagues that saved him from homelessness. The union's Frank Fairley.
I've got to say, much admiration for the blokes he works with. They actually took up a collection every week. If it wasn't for them putting in whatever dollars they did each week, each one of them, he would have been in deep financial trouble. And they put a levy upon themselves, basically to keep the wolf from the door.
After a lengthy appeal process, Sam's claim was recently approved and he received back pay. He's still waiting for the outcome of the court case and continues working at the factory part-time.
To speak up and to bring attention of bullying within workplaces is a hard thing to do, but in my mind, I believe it's gone so far that I cannot stop. I've got to see an outcome before I can let go of this whole issue and get it dealt with fairly within the courts or wherever it's going to end up.
WorkSafe is prosecuting Sam's employer but would not comment on the circumstances. Ian Forsyth.
I'm not across the details of specific instances, nor would it be appropriate for me to speak about any instances. There's significant rules with regards to privacy, so I'm really not in a position to comment at all on individual circumstances.
There's no doubt an inspector's job that deals with bullying is incredibly challenging. Ex-inspector with WorkSafe, Heather Baker-Goldsmith, says the work is also unrewarding.
In my experience, many inspectors are less comfortable dealing with issues that are not physical, that are not about the characteristics of a piece of equipment or things that are a lot more definitive. People tend to be much more comfortable in an enforcement role around because they feel they have firmer ground to stand on. Issues like bullying, which require a level of judgment and discretion and interaction with people, and where there is no black and white regulation to rely on, people tend to be less comfortable with because there's more opportunity for it to be said you got it wrong, and there's less for you to stand on in terms of justifying the action that you took. So it's an area where, in general, inspectors often are reluctant to work in.
But she says negative experiences like Sam's leave everyone vulnerable, including his employer.
When an inspector has come and looked at a specific issue and not taken any issue with it, on that basis, that employer feels they're entitled to be comfortable that what they're doing complies with the law. To then find that the same regulator further down the track lays charges against them in relation to that matter and that specific issue, they feel very aggrieved.
Heather Baker-Goldsmith says the system isn't working.
It does appear that the way that we as an Australian community have responded to this issue in workplaces has not been successful. We still have these incidents where people feel that they are very aggrieved in that they have suffered a situation at work, they have sought the assistance of the regulator and have either received none, or what they have received has in fact made the situation for them at work worse. I would think that there are a number of people who would feel that they really don't have the confidence that if they go to the regulator, this issue is going to be dealt with and something's going to happen.
If complaining about bullying can make things worse, then victims who want to improve their conditions at work are left in a bind. A bind a woman who wants to be known as Jane now wishes she hadn't got herself into.
To protect myself, I should have just shut up and I should have just looked for a new job and just left very quietly and very silently.
Jane's case is still very raw. She's at home struggling to recover from the conflicts at work. Jane started grappling with the bullying issue at the hospital where she was employed at around the same time when Brody Panlock's case was dominating the Melbourne press. She felt sympathy with a young waitress who was driven to suicide.
At some point, I felt the same to Brody. I didn't certainly feel suicidal, but I found it really hard to live my life.
It all happened at the beginning of this year, and at the same time, WorkSafe launched an advertising campaign about health and safety at work. Jane saw the ads on television.
Mrs. Henderson, can we speak to you alone?
At the time, I trusted that WorkSafe would do the right thing because at that time, it was all over the media. Every ad was on the TV about WorkSafe, we're looking after you, don't put up with bullying in the workplace, it's unacceptable, WorkSafe this, WorkSafe that. I don't believe that anymore.
Jane went through what she saw as bullying of an insidious kind. As a senior member of her team of nurses, she stopped being invited to meetings, her emails went unanswered, and she felt she was being frozen out.
At the beginning, you try not to be paranoid, but over time there was a pattern, and that's when I started to keep a diary.
A colleague of Jane also felt she was being bullied and decided to ask WorkSafe for advice. Despite her understanding that the conversation would be kept as confidential, WorkSafe sent a letter to the manager saying there had been an anonymous complaint. The manager suspected Jane and called her in.
So then she asked me what this was all about, and I said, well, that I thought it was quite inappropriate for her to be asking questions if WorkSafe was involved because they are really obliged to follow due process. So I was absolutely horrified. I was frightened.
At this stage, Jane didn't contact WorkSafe, but her partner advised her to lodge her own complaint so that at least someone was watching out for her. But it wasn't so. She says the bullying continued and intensified because now she was seen as a troublemaker. She says WorkSafe, who were initially supportive, stopped communicating. This lack of communication with victims is something that's been of concern to Jane's union, the Nursing Federation, for quite some time. In the past few years, the union came across other experiences where bullying complainants felt they were hung out to dry. In a 2009 letter to a lawyer working with the union, WorkSafe conceded there was an incident where there was a breakdown in communication and promised to revise its policies. It reads in part,
WorkSafe has reviewed its procedures for advising complainants where there is an allegation of bullying of the outcome of the inspector's inquiry. WorkSafe's procedures now require that the inspector telephone the complainant immediately after the team meeting where the outcome of the inspector's inquiry is determined.
The letter was almost 3 years ago. Jane's experience from this year shows that at least in her case, this policy wasn't followed. Background Briefing asks WorkSafe's Ian Forsyth about this policy.
It's a bit hard for me to comment other than the general principle that wherever possible we would seek to keep people informed. But we are obviously also bound by the need to make sure that an investigation is conducted in a very appropriate and proper manner. But the intention would be to have people aware of where things were at.
So you'd expect your investigators to inform the complainants when the investigation is complete about the outcome?
I would have thought that that would have been the normal circumstance, yes.
In the meantime, Jane's situation at work and the lack of contact from WorkSafe became too stressful and she resigned.
Because it was consuming my life and you know what? Life's too short.
In some professions, bullying is more common than others. The health field and the hospitality industry, for example, have been struggling with the problem more than most. Help me call a doctor, put me inside, put me inside, put me inside, put me inside. Experts say that stressful and deadline-driven working environments often lead to friction in the workplace. Michael Quinlan is a professor at the School of Organisation and Management at the University of New South Wales.
The nature of work has changed. Workplaces have been restructured, they've been downsized, there's changes in industrial relations climate, unions have far less say in the workplace, and there's really been an erosion of democracy in the workplace because there aren't ways where people can articulate dissent. And that's what's happening in the broader sense that allows things like bullying to flourish.
Government agencies, he says, can't be expected to fix everything.
There is a need, I think, to also recognise that the health and safety inspection and regulatory regime cannot fix up every problem that is being created by poor policies at other ends of society. So that if we deregulate the workplaces, you can't let the health and safety inspector come in and fix it all up. It's not going to work.
Michael Quinlan and his colleagues researched this area by interviewing inspectors. They also received exclusive access to bullying investigations out in the field. Their report shows many inspectors feel helpless in their job.
By the time the inspectors get involved in this, under the current framework, they're dealing with a situation where it's difficult to get the evidence, and when there has been a breakdown of social relations, a typical case is that both parties are embittered, and the inspector is seen as someone who's come in and not seen as a useful intervention by either party. So it's not a very satisfactory one for the inspector in that they've solved a problem, but nobody's happy. I saw a case where eventually the inspector had to drop the investigation because no one would act as witnesses. And, you know, that's a pretty unsatisfactory case too.
One day, during an inspection, Michael Quinlan witnessed an incident that made him doubt whether employers are serious about getting rid of bullying. It was an extreme case, but the employer struck back at his workers for making a complaint.
There's a strong perception in the workforce because of the current environment that they're very frightened of speaking out. And, of course, there are enough of employers doing those sorts of things to reinforce that sort of fear. And I saw it because I walked into a workplace and the first thing the employer said to the inspector was, "I know why you're here, because I've just sacked all my workforce for making a complaint."
Come through. Okay. Tony Kilbourne.
Thank you so much.
Hello. Nice meeting you.
We're in a conference room at the Melbourne-based law firm Nowicki Carbone, and we're talking to ex-police officer John and his solicitor, Tony Carbone.
And then I found out the problem, and it took 3 months.
Johnny's taking his previous employer, Victoria Police, to court, alleging he was bullied at work for over 20 years. The alleged untoward behaviour by his supervisor took many shapes, including verbal abuse.
Like, you wouldn't even speak to a crook on the street that way.
No.
He would use common gutter street language when he was speaking to subordinates.
Instances of what John now sees as bullying aren't very serious on their own, but as the attitude against him was repetitive, it had an effect on his mental health. John now says a culture of bullying is widespread throughout the police force.
Over 30 years policing, it certainly wasn't the first case, but most members tend to vote with their feet, and if they have a problem in their life at a police station, they transfer and hope it's going to be better than an ex-paddock. It's right through the organisation.
Nothing in his work as a police officer, John says, affected his mental capacity as much as the harassment at work.
Over 30 years, you handle everything. I've been at the wrong end of a shotgun. I've handled deaths in custody. I've had people that have died and they've been dead for a couple of weeks before they're found. They've had maggots popping out of them. I had to strip a parachutist to his parachute didn't open, and his whole body was like a big hunk of rubber.
People in positions like you have to face very tough situations. You could deal with that very well, and yet the bullying was different.
When you're in the police force, yes, you are dealing with negative issues in the community. It's very hard to deal with that and come back on home base if you're doing the right thing. If you're not incompetent or if you're not bent, you should feel supported on that home base. But that support is not there.
He says bullying has had an impact on his ability to function as a police officer.
I know as a policeman, you can carry a gun, you can carry a baton, but your primary asset is your confidence. And when you lose your confidence, you're gone, finished. And in this particular type of psychological bullying, that is the first thing that goes is your confidence. So, yes, it did impact on me and my ability to do my job.
A few weeks ago, a federal court hearing determined that Victoria Police had a case to answer. At the time, police argued the bullying was John's perception and that his mental health problems are a result of conflicts at home. But the judge dismissed this argument as a furphy. John is now suing for pain and suffering and loss of enjoyment of life.
Well, it's not something that I really looked forward to doing. It's not something that if I could look back in hindsight that I'd probably do again. Court would be an absolute bitter end for me. It's not something I would take on in any circumstances willingly. It's the absolute bitter end. But you're pushed into a corner when, unless somebody actually stands up and says, this has got to stop, it's just going to go on and on and on and on.
He's engaged one of Victoria's best-known health and safety lawyers, Tony Carbone. But even to experienced lawyers, bullying cases are very difficult to push in the court.
I hate to say this, and I know it's not the answer to a problem, but if you're in the early days of a situation where you think you're being bullied, and it's before you're actually at a point where you need medical treatment, if you can, get out of that workplace, move on, find alternative employment.
Bullying complaints to Tony Carbone's office continue to mount.
The number of calls we get is just phenomenal, and it's a sad state of affairs. I don't like the trend. I don't want to do these sorts of cases, and I'm not saying it because I don't believe that people are injured. I just think they're problematic. You can't measure the damage. People can't see it. Juries don't understand it. The WorkSafe people don't understand it.
Recent surveys show bullying complaints are growing. It's not known what's causing the rise, and it's impossible to get accurate statistics. It's a grey area. Tony Carbone explains what is needed to mount a bullying case in the court.
You generally go to a doctor and you tell the doctor that you're not feeling well and you give the reasons why. And in John's case, he would have gone to his GP and said, look, this is what I've been exposed to. And the doctor would have said, yeah, look, you're suffering from anxiety and depression. And it's reasonably clear cut that you can make that link. There's that causal link. I guess the real problem is to take it the next step and to prove that the employer's negligent. And that's where the employer has to be on notice that you are being bullied.
Sorry, David, can I just pop you on hold for 2 seconds, please? Very sorry about that.
We are at the offices of JobWatch, an employment helpline service for people who want advice about their work conditions. The director is Zana, by the way.
And then the calls range from a number of problem areas. For example, a caller would have called us because they've been dismissed from their employment. They may have been discriminated against. Otherwise, we have calls about bullying. And also we have a number of calls now about social media. What happens if they've been sacked by text?
One caller's case was so severe, it stood out in the JobWatch database for years. It was in 1996 when Jason Lithgow left school, aged 15, to take up an apprentice position as a panel beater. Though thrilled by the opportunities of a first job, he quickly became disillusioned. One day, Jason walked out on the job and later he was forced to resign. The mother of the young apprentice telephoned JobWatch with an inquiry about how to recover her son's unpaid wages.
The mother understood that her son was experiencing extreme difficulties at work and that her son had to go, and part of that was what were his entitlements in resigning from his employment. And in the course of that discussion, and this is of course what happens with most people, is that they call about a particular event, but in the course of that discussion it transpired that her son had experienced severe bullying.
Jason's mother realised the full extent of the abuse when on the phone to JobWatch and the legal advisor was pushing for details. Deborah Lithgow.
They asked a series of questions over the phone just to see what had been going on, and I was relaying the questions to Jason. They were asking things like, did anyone physically touch you? And yes, they did. Or what did they do? Were they throwing things at you? Yes. Then they asked if they'd ever used a rope on him, if he'd ever been tied up or had they ever used a rope. And I asked him that and he said yes. And when I asked him what they'd done, he said they'd put a rope around his neck and hung him in the lunchroom. They put the rope over a beam and then they'd pulled it up so that just the tips of his toes were grazing the floor. And then they left him there for about half an hour or so, and they kept going in and out and laughing at him and you know, just walking past the doorway and all that. And that was everybody that worked there, including the owner.
And that was the first you've heard about it?
That day was the first I'd heard about any of it.
But even though the bullying was so severe, initially, Deborah and Jason didn't think it was illegal. Zina, by the way.
No, I mean, this is the surprising aspect of bullying, whether it be from that physical abuse to the psychological abuse, people still don't understand it to be something that's unlawful.
The perpetrators were charged and convicted for inflicting grave bodily harm. They paid a large fine, but Jason Lithgow never recovered. Jason is sitting in a room next door where he can't hear his mother talking about what happened. He wants everyone to know about what he went through, but still, 16 years on, can't get himself to talk about it. His mother says the bullying has ruined his life forever.
He went off the rails a little bit. He took some drugs and that created or brought out the problem further and created this mental illness, and from that point onward his life hasn't been very good. He's not been able to work, he has no friends, so he doesn't mix with anybody, he can't go out in crowds, he pretty much sees his family and that's it. He doesn't really do much else.
This is our phone service here. A lot of, because our offices are now empty,
after 3 decades, JobWatch is now going through a massive restructure. In May, Victoria's government decided to cut their budget by nearly 60%. Most of their staff will be made redundant by the end of the year. Zana, by the way, fears her helpline will not be able to handle the workload. Changes to working environments mean bullying can happen everywhere. Professor Michael Quinlan.
There's a lot of talk about family-friendly workplaces today, but in fact, what is happening in a lot of workplaces is precisely the opposite. People are working longer hours, they're working irregular hours, which are not matched to their family needs. And so there's a level of tokenistic rhetoric going at one level, whereas the reality of what are changing in the workplaces are quite antithetical to that and are conducive to the sorts of management practices or attitudes between people in workplaces which are bullying and harassing and those sorts of behaviours.
Background Briefing's coordinating producer is Linda McGuinness. Research, Anna Whitfeld. Technical engineer this week is Timothy Nicastri. Our executive producer is Kirsten Garrett. I'm Hagar Cohen, and this is Background Briefing on ABC Radio National.
Bess and Dave have been married for over 30 years. She's Walpiri and he's Irish Catholic, and they're on a mission to stop the violence among Aboriginal Australians.
You never hear of Aboriginal people killing each other, because I guess in a town like Alice Springs, it just really is not a concern.
Meet Bess and Dave Price, a couple in the light of love, on The Spirit of Things. You can download or stream this program from the Radio National website.